Sin had left a crimson stain, he washed it white as snow. Lord, now indeed I find thy power and thine alone can change the leper's spots and melt the heart of stone. Jesus paid it all to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain, he washed it white as snow. For nothing good have I, whereby thy grace to claim, I'll wash my garments white in the blood of Calvary's Lamb. Jesus paid it all to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain, he washed it white as snow. And when before the throne I stand in him complete, Jesus died my soul to save, my lips will still repeat, Jesus paid it all to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain, he washed it white as snow.
And I want to start reading in verse 17. I'll first read it in the, I'm reading from the New King James Version, but later on you're going to get the Smith Revised Version here, just because there are, we'll talk about it, but it's really impossible in a smooth one-sentence translation to translate the beauty and the complexity of these proverbs. Proverbs don't go well from one language to another. We'll talk about that. I'll begin reading 17, chapter 26. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel, not his own, is like one who takes a dog by the ears, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. Where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles. They go down into the innermost belly. Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it. He who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. A lying tongue hates those that are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. When you read these proverbs, again, you have to understand they weren't written at one time by one person. Some of these proverbs are proverbs that were taken from other people. In fact, sometimes these proverbs are direct quotes from the proverbs of different people around them. Paul found no problem in quoting from Greek poets. We find quotes in the book of Jude from different pagan sources. They're neither right nor wrong, but as soon as they get in the Bible, we know that they're true, right? I mean, Benjamin Franklin can say a lot of stuff that's true, and we can appreciate it, but it's only when it gets in the Bible that we can live by it and we can stand on it. And so Proverbs tend to be statements that deal with life as a whole. And you got to be careful because sometimes you take a proverb and you put it into an every last situation in life kind of thing. They turn it into an absolute. Well, it's not. It's just a general observation. It's something that's true. For instance, there's a proverb that it talks about train up a child in, as the King James puts it, the way he shall go, and when he gets old, he will not depart from it. That's not a promise. That's not a statement of an absolute. That's a statement of a general truth that's usually true. Okay? For instance, this statement here, whoever digs a pit, he will fall into it, and who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. Well, there are times when people do something really nasty and it never comes back on them, right? There are times when people get away with sin, correct? We know all about that, you know. So the Bible isn't trying to tell you that every person who does something bad and wicked to someone else in his lifetime for certain this will happen. Proverbs are statements of things that are generally true. They help you to look at life and to say, hey, this is what's going on. And what we're seeing here also is that the Proverbs are arranged not simply as a haphazard throw them together, but oftentimes you see Proverbs that are arranged in the Proverbs about one thing in one place, another thing in another. Earlier it was talking about the lazy man in verse 13 down through verse 16. Verse 3 down through 12 is dealing with the fool, the person who you can't talk to, he's a dolt, he just won't listen to you. Let me start with verse 17 and read it to you in a different translation. Someone who takes by the ears a dog that is passing by is like a man who incites himself about a quarrel that is not his own. See the difference between that and what's here? In the King James translation, it's a man who passes by and meddles. But as I understand the Hebrew, it's you grab a dog by the ears who is passing by. Okay? The person who does that is the archetype, is typical of somebody who's just asking for trouble. I mentioned this morning about dogs, and that's one reason why I came here. Dogs in the Middle East were not considered your friends, okay? Dogs don't just pass by. Dogs roam and they scavenge and they're in the garbage and they chew up the corpses and they're really rotten things in the Middle East and you don't go near them. They're junkyard dogs, okay? And when it says he's passing by, the idea meaning he's going on his own business, he's trouble, but he wasn't bothering you. Okay, that dog is nothing but trouble, but he wasn't going to bother you. That dog was just going to pass by, and you went out of your way to grab him by the ears. Okay, that's the point. That this idea that we'll talk about meddling deals with the fact that there's trouble in the world. There are things that you should be able to just spot and to say, that is trouble, and I ought to stay away from it. And that's this picture of the dog. I wrote it down here. Look at Proverbs 14:16. It's interesting. I wrote this down because there's another word I want to deal with here in a moment. But look at Proverbs 14:16. A wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident. That word rages is the same word that is metal, that is translated metals in our passage. And by the way, evil here is not talking about something that's sinful. It's talking about something that's dangerous. It's a calamity. It's something that you should stay away from. And he says a wise man sees something that's trouble and he stays away from it. But the fool gets himself all worked up and it says, and he's overconfident, and he thinks he can handle it. And what this verse is talking about are people who see trouble in the world, they see things that are definitely wrong, and they get involved when they shouldn't. And they don't understand that it's none of their business. And this idea of a dog who's passing by in our verse is parallel to somebody, it says it's a quarrel that's not his own. That's just trouble looking for a place to happen. And so often Christians don't learn the 11th commandment. Mind your own cotton picking business. You know, we don't learn that. If there's a problem, I ought to minister for the Lord and fix it. Mind your own business. Find out, first of all, is it your business? Here it says who quarrels in it, who gets involved in the quarrel, not his own. It doesn't belong to him. And one of the things you ought to become very skilled at doing is saying, do I have any part in that? Does that belong to me or not? When you know that there are two individuals, friends, or even, by the way, let's start with family, okay? Here's the place where we throw all this caution to the wind, you know, everybody's got a right to get involved in everything. Two people are fighting in the family. What's your business getting involved? Just because you've got a heart for both of them, just because you have your perspective, which is, of course, right, you know, we think, well, I should step in and solve this. Stay out of it. You have to learn that that is not your business. That's trouble looking for a place to happen. And so often Christians have this idea that ministry is getting involved in everybody's problems and fixing them. It is not. And a lot of problems, you have to have the wisdom to see, hey, that's a junkyard dog. That's a bomb waiting to go off. And I don't want anything to do with that. One of the things that's interesting, this word for metals here, is actually the Hebrew word that means he gets all worked up, he gets angry about it. And what Christians do sometimes is they allow themselves to get angry and worked up and mad and frustrated about things that are really none of their business. And they don't get involved because there's a sense that I have a responsibility here. I have a ministry here. I'm the one who's in the right position to do it. They get involved because they got all worked up over somebody else's problem. A piece of advice. It's none of our business what happened to OJ this week. Okay? I don't know what you feel. I have some definite opinions. But if you're all worked up about it, drop it. All right? It's none of our business. These things happen every day all over the world. This kind of stuff goes on. It's a media event. That all they care about is, you know, there's one whole channel called Entertainment Television that's made millions of dollars off of this kind of sick stuff, and they're trying to keep promoting it. That's none of our business, is it? You know, if somebody were to stop me and to say, what do you think about the OJ? I'll say, I think it's none of my business. And I don't think it's any of yours either. You know, why do we get so worked up, and why do we get so fervent about these things? Honestly, that's none of our business. That's no concern of ours. And if we can't keep emotional distance between something that happened in California, people, that's California, okay? If there's nothing, you ought to be able to say, that's California. And if you can't keep your distance from Hollywood, how about what's going to happen in your family? And I see it all the time with Christians. There's something that goes on, and they get all angry, and they get all worked up about it, and you can't convince them, it's none of your business. God gave me a burden for it. Well, this word that means to meddle, that was translated here, meddle, is actually a word in the Hebrew that means you do it to yourself. You stir yourself up. You got yourself all worked up about that. And there may come occasion when the pastor's going to come knocking on your door and tell you this. And people don't like to hear it. But that's not right. What they're doing isn't right. So, we ought to do something. Well, no. There's a difference between that not being right and the fact that you have a right to get angry and to work yourself up about it. I've never met a meddler yet who didn't get worked up about it and who didn't think they had a perfect right to do it. And one of the things we do is we get so mad that it overrides what the Bible talks about as being wisdom. And you ought to know, that's none of my business. It's my business when I have a responsibility towards them, when I am responsible for them. That's when you have a responsibility. It's when you're responsible for someone. Okay, my two kids are fighting in my home at this time, and I'm responsible for it. When my kids leave my home, they're fighting and mad at one another. I have no responsibility. You know, I'm their parent. I'm no longer their referee. I am their parent. And it's responsibility that connects with what you should do. So often in a church, people get involved. Something was done that wasn't right. Maybe, but are you responsible
I'm not talking about an apathy, but I'm talking about knowing what's your business. And that's what wisdom's all about. And he says it's like grabbing a dog by the ears. One, because again, we're not talking about, you know, that, Toots's dog? That tiny little squished, what? Greta, yeah. The kids were talking about Greta Whitford. I'm trying to figure out, who is Greta Whitford? You know, but Greta, I don't know, what do you call the little dogs that look like they've been run over? Or the, huh? A dachshund. Well, I mean, those dogs got these big long ears, and they couldn't do anything to you anyways. You know, the little feet scrambling. It might even be fun to do it to a dachshund, you know, if you're having a bad day. And I had a couple of those. So I may be over to visit Marty, you know, and say, can I borrow your dog for a minute? But you ain't going to do it to a Great Dane. You're going to take a dog that's one of these mangy curs that's running around looting the garbage dumps, and he's passing by, and it's like, come over here. You know, the trouble when it may be one thing to pick him up by the ears. It's another thing to let him go. Right? And that's the whole point. What he has done is he has gotten himself involved in it, and he's in a fury. That's the other side of this. All this, by the way, all these meanings are contained in the proverb. Proverbs are written so they've got 6 or 7 different kinds of meaning to them. That's what made them a proverb. A law is straightforward. It means one thing. A proverb is clever because it means several things. And the idea is, he's in the midst of a fury. It's going at him, and what's he going to do now? Nothing. He's going to get chewed to bits. And that's what's going to happen every time. And you got to hear that ahead of time. And in a church, sometimes we get into so much trouble because people don't know to say, wait a second, I have a love and I have a concern, but I don't want to get involved in that if that is none of my business. There are things the body should get involved with that an individual shouldn't get involved with. There are certain people who shouldn't get involved in certain things. I'll tell you, I learned early on that it's not up to the pastor to solve the disagreements within the Ladies Missionary Society. All right? I have learned that a long time ago. If you want to talk to me about other things, fine. But other than that, it's like, work it out. You lock them in a room and don't let them out till they're in peace. I hold the door, but I don't go inside, you know, and talk. Well, is it your business? Is it your responsibility? And these things are, it's uncommon sense is what it is. And we get trapped in it. But notice how this ties into what goes on next. Like a madman who throws firebrands. In those days, when you were under siege, the greatest weapon you had was the things that you, torches that you lit and you threw over the top. Because once you started a fire inside, there was so little water that though that was a pretty dangerous thing to toss fire inside of a place. And so he says, who's tossing these firebrands and arrows and death is the man who actually deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. This word deceive, this isn't a practical joke. I read one commentary who said this is practical joking. This is somebody who sets out within the church and who sets out and says something that's untrue, and he gets caught at it, and he says, well, I was only kidding, or that's not real. I'm not really serious about that. And he says, you can't do it. This is a man who not only has gotten involved, but he's gotten other people involved. And so often, and by the way, the rest of this passage is going to be not about just the meddler, who is somebody who personally gets involved, it's about the talebearer. The whisperer, the murmurer, the kind of person who goes around the church and says, oh, this is wrong over here, and something over here, and did you know about this? And there's a tremendous danger here. And the first way that they're portrayed, and again, there are different views of the same person, he said like a madman. He's like a guy who works in the post office and shows up one day with an automatic weapon. All right, that would be our way of describing it in modern day America. I don't know what it is about working at the post office. I got to ask the ladies down there when they're having a good day. But you know, there's something about it, right? How in our society, How many times when you read, it just happened again 2 weeks ago. Did you read about that? A guy took a pistol in a little place out in the, it was in Minnesota or some place where you wouldn't think they, you know, they care about much of anything. You know, it's not a hotbed of activity. And he took a pistol and shot up another postal center. Well, that's our society. And that's what this is comparing it to. He goes in there and he's indiscriminate. He'll kill anybody and he doesn't care. The person who would actually deceive and then say, I was only joking. We're responsible for every word that comes out of our lips when we say something. It's always difficult for me because my philosophy is what you see is what you get. I tell you what I'm thinking. But there's a lot of things the pastor's thinking that he shouldn't tell you about. And I don't know how to deal with that sometimes, but I have certain controls on my life. And when I start to say something that I know is bad for someone, I shouldn't do it. When what I say comes out of my, when what comes out of my mouth is damaging to someone, that's when I should say, uh-uh, you don't say that. Uh-uh, that doesn't come out. Because it's indiscriminate. It kills. Words kill people. Churches are not killed with other things but words. It's always words and what people say that kills a church. Always. And Baptists in particular don't seem to have the law of kindness on their tongue that the book of Proverbs talks about. And this meddler here that we saw before, somebody who thought he had the right to get involved because he got worked up. Well, here's a person who is thoughtless. Before, the guy was too thoughtful. Here is the person who is thoughtless. He just doesn't care about what he says. I was only joking. Notice verse 20. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And where there's no whisperer, the strife ceases. The Bible says that there are some people who go about as whisperers. They got little bits of information. And it's not the facts that keeps strife going. It's the whisperer. The point is that the wood is what gets the fire to burn. And it's not what this whisperer has to say that keeps the fire going. It's he himself. Look at this word, I think it's in chapter 16. Let me see if I marked it in this Bible. I think I even wrote it down someplace, but my notes are too small to see. Look at chapter 16, verse 28. Yeah, start with 27. An ungodly man digs up evil, and it's on his lips like a burning fire. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. Okay? Again, the Bible works in what's called parallelism. It'll say something once one way, and then it'll say it the next way. And see how these two verses are parallel. An ungodly man digs up evil, a perverse man sows strife. It's the idea of before you can plant the seed, what do you have to do? You got to plow. All right? The digging up evil is like it's the word for plowing. One guy plows, the other guy sows. All right? It's the same activity. And he's saying strife isn't natural. Strife doesn't grow by itself. Strife isn't like a weed that grows up by itself. Strife is a cultivated plant. And if you've got strife in a church, it's not the weeds that grow up around the outside. Somebody plowed and somebody planted. And always remember that. That when there is strife, it was accomplished and it was work. And so he compares them, and then he said, his lips is like a burning fire, and the whisperer can even separate the best of friends. That's the same word that we have here of the talebearer. It's absolutely amazing what kind of work can go on, that people can have a love and an affection for one another and can be separated just by that, by this person. And the Bible is telling us to be afraid of being in this role of the whisperer, and we're to be afraid of the person who is the whisperer. Well, there's a problem over here, or there's a problem over there. Well, there are times when Christians talk about problems. I do all the time. That seems to be my life. But there's a difference between an open discussion of it and the idea of someone who is sowing strife or sowing the discontent. There's a difference between people who are saying, here's a problem and let's talk about it, and someone who says, I want to talk about the problem. There's a problem here, there's a problem over here. It's called the whisperer. It's the same word that's often used in the Bible for the murmurer. You know what onomatopoeia is? How many know what that is? Onomatopoeia. What is it, Dan? Exactly. A word that sounds like what it says. They talk about little birds peeping. Beep, 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 beep. We talk about a door squeaking. My voice is breaking here, so I can do it real well. Squeaking. It's onomatopoeia. It's a word that sounds like what's going on. And murmur is just, and there's a, the Greek word is glusmos, all right? Murmuring is that. We've done this before. Everybody, real low, say the word murmur three times all together. Murmur, murmur, murmur. A little louder. Murmur, murmur, murmur. Murmur, murmur, murmur. That's exactly what it is. You know how you got to put your mouth down to say murmur, all right? It's that, it's talking under your breath. Murmur, murmur. There's something like this. There's a problem over here. Maybe you weren't aware of it, but we got to do something with them. We got. That's the murmurer, and that's the whisperer. It's like, psst, come here, psst, come here. You know, I got something for you. Well, what they've got is death, and our job is to recognize when that's going on and to say, okay, that's a problem. But it might be like that junkyard dog. I don't need to deal with it. I have other things I need to deal with. And are we dealing with the problem, or are we whispering and spreading the problem? How serious is this problem, or how much of it is just that we're spreading it ourselves and we're making it go on? Baptist churches have to walk that line. Some churches, they don't want to hear about problems. They don't want to talk about them publicly. I got news for you. If you don't talk about your problems publicly, people are going to talk about them secretly. If something's a problem, you deal with it in public. You might as well know that's one of my real concerns with the regular Baptist movement. I wish we'd talk about our problems at our meetings and preach about them, instead of waiting so somebody can talk about it outside and get contentions and personal. If you have disagreements, you get the guys up there and you let them preach about it, and we'll see which one is right. You get the guys on both sides and let them preach. Truth was never hurt by having it discussed. What happens, though, is when it's done in secret, when it's like, well, we don't want to talk about that. And sometimes Baptists are very much that way. Well, if it's not good, we don't want to talk about it. Well, I don't want to be good time chuckles Charlie, you know, who I don't want to talk about the good stuff. But on the other hand, I don't want to be the kind that whisperer. Oh, there's a problem over here. You might not have been aware, but there's a problem over here. Hey, that's not right. This person we're being warned against. Look at what it says in verse 21. As charcoal is to burning coals, and as the wood to fire, so is the contentious man. He kindles strife. The point being that what charcoal does is it burns for a long time. The fire goes out, but those charcoals are specially designed that they burn for a long time. Back in an example, in the days of the Old Testament, it was very hard to start a fire. I don't know. Have you ever tried starting the fire? I once had that Boy Scout apparatus, you know, the little thing where you start the sparks. Never in my life have I started a fire that way. In fact, coming from a man who has a fireplace and I grew up, it sometimes isn't all that easy to get a good fire going in your fireplace with a match. So you can imagine how hard it would be back then. How in the world did you start a fire? You know, sure, you can get a couple sparks going. But how hard is it to get that spark to land just on the right piece of dry tinder? And starting a fire all from scratch is very hard. So what they would do is they would carry a little box, and in this little box they'd carry a live burning coal from fire to fire to fire. And there's a guy called the Iceman. They found a man from roughly 2,000 years before Christ in the Alps. He was perfectly preserved. He'd been frozen. And they have all his gear and all that. Anybody see the PBS special on him? Okay, some of you may have seen that. It's real interesting. And one of the things he had was a little box to carry his tinder in, this coal that would burn. Because you're up in the Alps, and there's not only not that much wood, but if you don't get that fire started, you freeze to death. And so they would carry it. And back in the book of Genesis, when Abraham goes to sacrifice Isaac, you've got this curious expression. He took the wood and he took the fire. And some commentators turn that around to say it's firewood. Uh-uh. He was taking a coal with him. In the coals that were used from the temple in the Jewish temple, the temple at Jerusalem, you always took the coals from one fire and used them to start the next fire. Guess what happens when you use foreign coals? It's called strange fire. And that's where Nadab and Abihu got in trouble. They didn't use the coals that were from a sanctified fire. But the idea is, this coal doesn't go out. You can put it in a little box. I wouldn't like carry it in my back pocket or anything, but you know, you carry it in a reasonably safe place, and then when you want to start the fire, it's still burning hours later. And that's what this talebearer is, because he's a contentious man. He needs strife. He needs it. It's something that he loves, and he's like a coal. Where he goes, there's always something wrong. This is not right, or that's not right. Again, if you're involved in a disagreement with somebody, and you disagree or you're quarreling, this doesn't mean you're contentious. All right? So sometimes people do that. Well, if you ever quarrel with anybody, you're contentious. Well, then Jesus and Paul were contentious by that standard, and I don't buy that. A contentious man is every place he goes, there's something wrong. Stirring up, there's something that's not right or that's not right. And the point is, he's kindling the strife. It's not a fire. It's not the wood. It's him. And if you didn't have that coal, the problem would go out. Anybody who's had three or more children has one child who's the coal, right? One child who's at the root, that you know that if there's a strife, hey, these two may be fighting, but if I take this one out and put them out in the other room, that the fight's going to go away. I didn't do anything. Get out of here. You know, I'll take care of that. Because there's always someone, and sometimes, always God gives us little inciters, you know, little ones that they kind of stir it up, and you come down, and they're sitting on the couch. Somebody's raging and the fire's going on, and they're kind of sitting there, you know, if they can think of it in time, they'll open up the Bible and they'll be doing their devotions, you know, like, well, who, me, you know. You see that in your kids. God sees that in his church. People who stir things up. Some people do it because they like it. Other people do it because they need to. Their lives aren't settled. Their lives are in a turmoil. And that's how they treat everything around them. The turmoil in their life gets reflected on the lives that are around them. Family reunions and Smith family reunions are great, you know, as long as you remember to call the police first and let them know what potential is going on. You come and say, where's the fight going to be? Where's the fight going to be? Now, usually you can locate the fight in terms of where the beer keg is, you know, that you know it's going to be on that side. But every once in a while, you know, it breaks out some other place. But there are certain people in the family, they got so much strife going on inside of them that they have to see strife in everything around them. Instead of facing their problems, it's easier to get everybody else all stirred up about everything else. And that's what a contentious person is. And what he's trying to say is that's what's keeping the fire going. It's that contentious person, the person who just needs to see things wrong. But then verse 22 is the warning to us. The words of a, and this is the same word, by the way, as up above, talebearer. It's the whisperer. The words of a whisperer are like tasty trifles. Now, this word, like so many words in the Proverbs, has two meanings. And both of them are appropriate. That's the whole idea of a proverb. You take one word that has two meanings. Sometime I'll tell you about, maybe I have, about being born again. That's a double meaning word. It means to be born again. It means to be born from above. And the whole key to understanding John 3:16 is to understanding it's a proverb. It's a mashal with two meanings. But here, I'll save that for another message. But here, this word means two things. It's the kind of thing that goes down easy. It's like Godiva chocolate. Or you ever had that chocolate, those of you who like chocolate, Symphony, Hershey Symphony? Oh my, oh my. You can't keep it in your mouth. It just kind of slides down your throat. It is absolutely great chocolate. There's a lot of things that do that for me. You start out with like 7-8 chocolate chip cookies and they're gone because they just go down easy, you know, as opposed to something like a bran muffin for me. I see these people with these huge bran muffins, and it's like, oh boy, you got to be like a rat to gnaw that thing. but you give me a chocolate chip cookie, and oh, it just goes down so nice. It just seems to, and I like, oh, I'll tell you what goes down easy. Concord grapes, right? They're gone. It's like, I didn't even get a chance to taste it. And it's just gone. My dad doesn't eat the skins. And how many of you do that? Don't eat the skins, you just take the inside. How many of you eat the skins? Ah, good for you. Two people in this world, the skin eaters and the go down easier. So for those of you who like it to go down easy, this is you. It's like something that just goes down so fast. It slides right down. And that's the point. You know why the talebearer is so successful? Because we love it. We like it. Just that little bit of information. Just that. He couldn't get away with it. And notice how it's always he tonight, because the ladies get lambasted with this. And he is generic, okay? He or she is what I mean by this, but I always say he because sometimes the ladies are the ones who get lambasted. Men, we just gossip different. You know, we're better at it. You know, we get away with it better. You know, we're just a little, we have another way of dealing with it. But he, take that as a generic, that person kind of thing. But it's like a tasty trifle. It just goes down. There's a whole show on TV called The Gossip Show. It is nothing but the biggest bunch of foolishness and stupidity and whatever. I recommend that you spend about 5 minutes watching it sometime and say, can you believe that they got sponsors to sponsor a whole show about the stupidest, rottenest little stuff about Hollywood stars who mean nothing in the real world? But people like that. You know the other word that this is? It's a wound. It's the word for a wound. It's a festering sore. And it says the words of a talebearer are like wounds that get you inside. They go right down inside. And if you'll pardon me for this rather earthy example, what's going to happen if you eat that whole basket of grapes? It went down easy, didn't it? Okay, you know what I mean? You know, what's going to happen if you ate that whole bowl of applesauce? I mean that whole bowl of applesauce. It went down easy, okay? But it'd be a wound, you know? Okay, enough said. Well, the point is, this is the double pun here. It doesn't just go down easy, but it hits you deep inside. Oh man, you eat applesauce. One time I made the big mistake. We had this place that was selling a special kind of spiced ribs. And I swallowed it with a quart of apple cider. I had a rack of ribs and a quart of apple cider. And the Lord visited me that evening with a real reminder of what life was all about. Because round about, it was about 8 o'clock, boom. It's like something in my stomach went, oh. Of course, my wife had been watching me the whole time, just waiting for this moment. Just waiting, she knew, because I'm munching it down. And you know how ribs are. I'm covered just like, you're going to pay for this. I don't care. But that, all of a sudden, when that cider hits, you know it. You're in trouble. And it's deep, and it's a pain. And that's what happens with the words of a talebearer. You swallow them real easy. It's right there, and then all of a sudden, it's deep inside of you, and you can't get it out. Once you've listened to it, you'll never forget it. Once you've listened to that, there'll be that doubt in your mind, that sense of, oh, maybe that was true. Maybe there was something. Oh, no. But it's always in your mind. Did you want to know that about them? Did you really want to know that? You'll never be free of that knowledge for the rest of your life. It's a deep wound, and it's inside of you. It's like pornography. Once you see it, it's there. It's there, and it won't leave you. It's a sick thing. And that's what gossip is. It's a wound inside of you. It goes down so easy, and you pay the price. And what we're being warned against is this whole concept of meddling ourselves because we get worked up about it, and we think we have a right. The person who does it thoughtlessly and the person who does it not knowingly, but maybe maliciously. They just need the strife, and they're stirring it up. Maybe they're the person who gets all worked up about it. The Bible says you don't listen to it. It's one thing for them to do it, but you don't listen to it. because it's a wound that's in the, it's in the doors of the belly. It's in the rooms of the belly, and it never leaves. Let's pray. Oh, Father, bless us. Keep our hearts wise. You give us so much wisdom in a passage like this. Keep us loving you and wanting to do what's right. Make us people who speak our minds freely and openly and who say the truth. I pray, Father, that we'd be a church that stands up for what's right and sees right. But make us a church of lovers, of people with grace on their lips. That, Father, we don't want to see what's wrong, nor do we want to hear these things. These things I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.